Yes.
Just happened yesterday.
Okay.
House.
Excellent.
Woodward were loading up, and Jason and Beth were trying to get the kids to help, and it was just empty threat after empty threat. Okay, if you're not going to help, you're going to lose it. You're not going to help, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
Okay, the phone's going to go. And it's like I just sat and watched, and it just went on and on, and there's never any follow through with any of them. I'm sure some of them was they were in front of us, but
yeah.
Empty threats, not following through.
Mm-hmm. I think, and this is something I'm curious what you guys think. Sometimes there's something, I think, a deeper reason when I talk to people, or even when I think about our past, as to why we can really be afraid to actually, and part of being an authority is then giving a consequence that you mean what you say, and if they don't obey, there's a consequence. So why do sometimes we resist embracing that as the parent? Like, what can be kind of underneath that?
Because sometimes it punishes you, mm-hmm. In addition to the kid.
Yeah.
An example would be you take a car away.
Yeah.
So then you are taking them
to. You're now you're the one driving.
That's right.
And you're picking them up from school, and you're so you know.
That's right. It's very difficult, and it's sometimes the punishment for them is a punishment for you. Yeah.
I've got an example of that yesterday. Okay. We were in Bass Pro, and the kids were whining, and I told them if they asked for candy one more time, we're not having it.
Yeah.
And then they did, so I had to drive home without candy.
Oh. You should have gotten it for yourself. Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm having candy. We're not having candy. Yeah, I do think that when you, and if you have embraced that role of authority, it makes you much more careful about the commands, the instructions that you give, because you know that you are just as bound as the children are by that command. If I instruct them, you are to do this, they're bound by God to submit to that authority, and if they don't, I'm equally bound to then administer parental discipline and correction. And so sometimes we can resist that authority because, again, that laziness says, well, if I say this, I know they're not going to obey it, right? So it's like, I know what's coming up in the next however long time period I think it's going to take. So that can really be difficult, right? Yeah, Judy.
And as having been a single parent, it's even harder to discipline because sometimes you're not home to follow through. Like, people say, well, take these TV privileges away. Take this privilege. I said, I'm not at home to enforce that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't enforce a punishment, it's irrelevant to even give them a punishment.
Yeah.
You can't make sure that it's done.
Yeah. So, with those things in mind, when you think about, have you ever heard, like, if someone says authoritarian parenting, right? Think about what comes to mind, because we were just kind of talking about how sometimes we resist it because, again, we don't want to be, we're kind of avoiding, we're either being lazy. Like, what do you think when people tell, oh, that's authoritarian parenting? What do you think comes to mind? Positives, negatives?
I think there's a tendency to think of it as without love.
Mm-hmm.
It's just do this, don't do that, and there's a tendency to be seen that way.
Yeah, that's loveless. It's just I'm the authority, do what I say.
The drill sergeant.
Yeah, military drill sergeant. Mm-hmm. Clean your bed, clean your room, press your salute. I don't know. Saluting didn't work well in our home. We just gave it up after the first few times. What else? Authoritarian?
Kind of like my Aunt Deacon was. Do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing I was thinking about is just the idea that when we think about, you know, who God is, we know that he's both just, and he has wrath for sin, and he's also loving and merciful. And when we get, when we have poor theology, we can tend to kind of mix up and leave out one of those two things, where God is only a God of justice, only a God of wrath, and we have poor theology because we don't really embrace his love and his mercy. And also we can err on the other side, where he's only love, only mercy, there's no justice, there's no wrath. And kind of like what we're talking about, I think that the way in which we err, if we do, can also then bleed into the way in which we parent, And so when you think about God and how he relates to us as parents or as believers, right? God's there, God's our authority. And he loves us by giving us commands. And then how do we love him?
Obedience.
By obeying his commands, yeah. And so when we think about our kids, right, we're the authority over them, there's kind of that similar type structure. And if we tend to see God more on this side, right, that's going to most likely kind of bleed into the way in which we parent, right? If we become kind of that authoritarian drill sergeant, oftentimes that can come from like that poor theology of who God is and what he's like. And we tend to maybe parent. Do you think, we often think that and say that people tend to parent how? What's the main indicator of how they parent? The way that they are parented, yeah. And so for most of us, that's our first initial, like, unthinking response. We just do in the way, like, we have this one picture of what parenting is like, that's what our parents were. And the only way to change that is by having a new, kind of renewed view of what a godly parent, what a godly father is like. And so that renewing our mind is to try and get that aligned one way or the other with who God is and what he's like as a parent. Okay? Do you think that within the church, do you think that we tend to err more on this side or on this side? What do you think? We were just talking about how we're really blessed that many of us parent in a very similar way, and you could see a kid doing something, and sometimes a parent will just, don't do that, you know, come over here, you know, and they're like, oh, thank you. You know, it's like they've got 10 moms and 10 dads. What do you guys think? Where are we strong, where are we weak?
This particular church or just in general?
Well, if you're willing to try it, you can say.
I think in general depends.
Midwestern, our area.
On what church you're going to.
Yeah.
What have you seen? I feel like there's more there.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, you know, if you focus more on the love and mercy, you have a lot of undisciplined children. You have a lot of children getting away with things, and you have probably a lot of kids who feel really good about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in sin, and their parents aren't dealing with it. But on the other side, there's usually, if it's too much of justice and wrath, then you don't have that relationship. You don't have you're not considering their emotions, you're not considering the whole child. I guess that's one way to put it.
You brought up kind of some descriptors, so that might be a good way to think about it. Like, in your own parenting, if you've parented, or in observation, are there little red flags that tell you might be on this side or you might be on this side? How do you know if you look at your own parenting or at some other family that you're kind of missing out on either the love, mercy, or are there any kind of red flags that you can envision? So a clear one for me would be like, how do you give discipline or how would you spank? This never for us. And for this, for everything, right? They're not perfect. They're going to receive wrath. Here, there's never any displeasure. You never show any displeasure in anything that they do. Are there more tangible things you can think of?
Probably the way that kids respond to instruction would.
Okay.
They respond in like a fearful way, like quickly, I'm going to do it. Oh, no, I don't want to, you know.
They ball up. They, yeah. You know.
Quick. And then if they're just ignored,
Yeah, whatever. That's good. The way you can see kids respond to their parents can sometimes be an indicator.
Yeah, I'd say their obedience. And I think that would be an indicator for both sides.
Yeah.
If they can obey with a happy heart, or if they, you know, obey, but then when you turn your back, they can disobey.
Yeah, that's great. I like it. So,
if they don't obey at all, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah. So, all the way. Right. Happy heart. We were talking the other night about parenting and different family members and all the different ways that they parent, and whether or not some of the younger parents are open to, you know, teaching and things. So Chris and I said something. Luke was in the room. I said something like, "Well, as it's been better as the kids have aged, because." And I was like, how do I say this? And he's like, well, they see how it works. And I'm like, well, maybe, but not quite, right? But you can somewhat, on average, maybe, right? Because we have to be careful, right? Judging the parents right away by the way the kids. But in general, yeah. When you see that the kids, they obey right away, they're happy, they're not fearful, in a sense, right? Not in terror, but they have enough fear that they maybe right. That's kind of good indicators.
I think also how they respond to other authorities.
So yeah.
I had somebody tell me one time, so I know you think things are not going well at home, but what are their teachers saying? Mm-hmm. What's their youth group leader saying? Well, mm-hmm. My kids all got shiny reports. And I would say, I'd look at the teacher and go, is that my kid?
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was always an indicator for me, mm-hmm. is that, you know, I felt like, okay, well, might be doing something right if they're responding appropriately to others.
That is a huge one, and I think sometimes that's something we really have to remind ourselves, where I think you're on the other side, where you thought they were much worse than the other, right? Sometimes it's little Johnny would never, but if you talk to his teachers or Sunday school teachers, if we, and just to let all who's our parents or not, it's very hard at any time to like tell someone that there's something with their kids that needs to be fixed. That's very hard to do. Mm-hmm. And after one time of just rejecting that, it becomes almost impossible to then confront a parent whose kids aren't acting the way they think they are. So when you're a parent, or when you become a parent, if someone comes to you with some sort of feedback about your child or with a parent, welcome it as much as you want to resist it. Welcome it, listen to it, because when you don't, it really just shuts off all other, it makes it very difficult for people to help you as a parent. Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you look at the justice and wrath part, I understand, like a lot of times God's justice is an expression of his love, mm-hmm. not just his displeasure. And mm-hmm. like if you're punishing your kids because they're ruining your relaxing Sunday afternoon that you're planning on watching mm-hmm. football, but they're acting up, mm-hmm. right? That's punishment in the service of yourself. Mm-hmm. As opposed to you're really concerned about their laziness, mm-hmm. where it's going to lead. That's punishment in service of them, because ultimately I think to be consistent and disciplined in your punishment mm-hmm. takes a lot of self-control, sacrifice. It means you set aside things that you want to do mm-hmm. because you're going to be working on training your kids. So I think the big test is, why are you doing it? Is it because I want peace and quiet, or I want to have kids that make me look good, or am I really concerned about these character traits that are going on?
Yeah. Yeah, the motivation of why we discipline, it's usually, right, that there's something that there's displeasure in, right? And is that because is it self-centered, self-focused? Mm-hmm. Or is it that, no, you're doing something that's damaging to you, to your walk with God, to your siblings, to mm-hmm. the other parent, right, and addressing that. What would you say? Let's say you're talking to someone and say they make this claim, right, that it's dehumanizing to demand that your child must obey you. How dare you demand? What would you say?
You are always under somebody's authority. In any work, life, mm-hmm. any time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does it dehumanize you to obey the law?
Mm-hmm. Very rational. Very good. That's good. That's good. And you're kind of bringing out that idea that obedience and authority, right? It is a good thing in the right context.
Because I'm assuming I'm not talking to another believer, but
right.
Like, does it dehumanize you to obey God?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
No. Or any other source of authority.
Yeah.
Right.
That logic doesn't follow.
Right. And so you're kind of at a loss if they come back with, yeah, it does. They don't want any authority. But anyways. Oh, man. Like, you know, like, who am I talking to?
I mean, just imagine if you removed all authority from young children's lives. Like, that's how we get Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Is it selfish to get your children to obey you? Depends on your motives. So it's possible that you could do it selfishly motivated. And even if you're doing it for the right reasons, I would say it is a good thing for me. You know,
yeah, you benefit from it.
You are blessed by kids that are obedient.
But I think in a large way, like training your children to be under control of something other than their own whims and passions
mm-hmm.
is actually the most humanizing thing you can do. Animals are subject to all their whims and passions.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they have.
Mm-hmm.
Humans have reason and the ability to make choices between the different wants.
Mm-hmm.
And we're training our children towards the good, and that is the most humanizing thing you can
mm-hmm.
do for them.
Yeah, and I would even extend that, even up that, even in the Trinity, you have the Son submitting to the will of the Father,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that is to kind of picture that role of the Father and the Son is an amazing trait, an amazing characteristic, amazing relationship that exists. And so we have a God, a triune God, where the Father lovingly directs the Son, and the Son lovingly submits. So that's our perfect example for them and for us. And so we get to see, you know, with our kids, we get to demonstrate, look at the Son and the Father. Look at me as I follow Christ, right? I'm submitting to Him. So we have all these examples where obedience is good.
Mm-hmm.
Submission is good. And so it's a humanizing thing, and it's a very godly thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you think about what we're training to, we're training our kids to be self-controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're constantly operating on just this emotional level and letting them let their emotions dictate everything, they're going to be in trouble when they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
So just the idea of we are training, it's a fruit of the Spirit. You're training self-control, and just understanding the importance of that, not just now, not when they're
mm-hmm.
a teenager,
mm-hmm.
but when they're 30, or when they're a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think about Tolkien and the ring, if you guys know the Lord of the Rings, and like there's that ring of power, and that how everyone thinks that if they just had the power, then they could use it rightly, but it destroys them, it corrupts them, and in many ways, giving your kids the authority over their own life, it's a power and a control that's self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. it's a compassionate thing to say, I'm going to hold on to this powerful, deadly weight that you would crush yourself under by helping you make the decisions that are going to be a blessing to you. I'm going to help you decide when you're little what you should eat, when you should go to bed, and how you should treat your mom and dad, right? And so all of those acts of authority are really training them. It's training their brain, training their heart, training their spirit of what I should do, how I should act before they're ready to take on that authority. And is it Shepherd Ian Shaltar? He talks about how your authority, right? We'll say 0-2 adult over here. He talks about how your authority is like kind of on this downward. You have the most authority when they're born, and as they age and they gain more and more abilities and strength, your authority is kind of diminished until they leave the home. And then he talks about how, so this is like authority. And I think he uses the word influence. And how your goal is that as you exercise your authority over time and your children are trained up, you have greater and greater influence because they learn to love and respect and honor you and honor the way that God has given his commands to you. And when they become an adult and leave the home, you're no longer the authority in their life, but you have a great influence because they are honoring. It's kind of, they see the goodness of the way that you've raised them. So why do you think it's important to establish it when they're young? Why is that? Why is the timing so important? When should we start? 5 years old?
Oh dear.
What about, like, one follow-up there on H, what kind of latitude does the Bible give us in establishing authority? Like, can it look differently from house to house?
It can, but, I mean, as we're talking, I keep thinking about an instance many, many years ago. We had some people ask us to watch their kids for a night, mm-hmm. and I hadn't had them over before for a night, and so I put them to bed, and a long time later, they should have been fast asleep. I went up and found them, and they were both crying. They had been taught that no matter what, you never get out of bed. And so we have to be, like, mm-hmm. we have to be so careful. Yes, mm-hmm. we need to teach kids that when we put you to bed, you stay in bed. Mm-hmm. There's also that compassion mm-hmm. that we're teaching our kids, you know, but when you really are sad, when you really are scared, mm-hmm. you come to me, mm-hmm. you know, like, so that I can talk with you and, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, we need to establish authority, mm-hmm. strong authority when they're mm-hmm. young, but laced with the compassion.
Yeah. I think when what you're talking about too is like with this sometimes at the imbalance with being overly authoritarian, you can be to where there is a tendency towards total control and no freedom, no choice, right? Whereas over here you can have parenting where it's total freedom, right? No control, total choice. And so again, God gives us commands, right? A set of commands on how to love him and how to love one another. But then there's a great amount of freedom of within those laws too, to make lots and lots of choices individually.
I think there's also, like, if you look at husband-wife, right? Wives mm-hmm. are abusive. That looks a little bit different. That fleshes out a little bit differently in every single marriage.
Yeah.
Just like children obey your parents, mm-hmm. fleshes out a little bit differently. Now there are certain things that are mm-hmm. to be expected, but there are some nuances in there that it might look a little bit different for my friend's kid yeah. to obey their parent versus my child to obey me. Like,
yeah.
The things that I require might be different, but that obedience mm-hmm. is still required, even if I have different preferences or yeah. things that are placed upon my children. The obedience is still there. It's just mm-hmm. a little bit different what that looks like.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's plenty of things where I would say lots of the families that have similar philosophies will do it just a little bit differently. How do I interrupt when I need to talk to you? What if I need to get out of bed and I've been told not to, right? What if X, Y, and Z? So kind of that part of that skill of parenting is developing within your home. How does that work for our family? And that a lot of times is done really well by in the context of the church mm-hmm. because you get to talk to lots of different godly parents. Mm-hmm. How did you do that? What do you do when your kids, or you see it, you observe it. Oh, that was really neat, right? Mm-hmm. The hand on the leg trick. I need to say something. I'm going to wait here until mom and dad acknowledges me, right? Mm-hmm. Some people, they give them the hand like this, not yet. Right? So there's different ways that you can work things out. You got a lot of latitude there.
Well, I think you're pointing out something that was important for us, because we are from non-Christian homes, but the importance of the church, mm-hmm. and that the church became, they were our kids' family, mm-hmm. and we're disciplining our kids right along with us. And, you know, my 40-year-olds still have Aunt Maria and Uncle John.
Yeah.
You know, we just have this whole church of grandparents and aunts and uncles, and mm-hmm. Just how that contributed, because it wasn't all mom and dad. There was a consistency of behavior that was required mm-hmm. and expected. So it was in a sense, even though we were ultimately responsible, the church really co-parented.
Yeah.
Our kids.
Yeah, and I know that when our kids were growing up, it would happen two ways. One, observationally, like another kid would do something that I was like, oh, that's fine. And their parent would discipline them and train them to do something different. Like, oh, okay, we could train them. Or like verbally, I remember another mom told Krista after we spent the evening together, you know, you can train them not to do that. You can train them to do this. Oh, you know, it's like just didn't occur to us. Mm-hmm. Because when you come from a home where that never happened, you don't have a grid for what that looks like. So either seeing it, mm-hmm. right? And so big plug to like spend time together, take your family and hang out with other families. And yeah.
I think sometimes our culture kind of has this idea of that's just what they do when they're young, and they'll grow out of it. Like it's
yes.
just a stage, and so it's accepted.
Yes.
And so you don't think that, oh, they can be trained not to do this because it's just the common thing that every kid does at that age.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Dave, a great recommendation, listen to the podcast. So it changes its name over time. I think it's gentle parenting.
Gentle parenting.
Gentle parenting. Sometimes grace parenting and different types where it's kind of in this area, but one of the tenets that's argued is that it's very much kind of biologically based, that the kid's brain is developing, and so tantrums is just what you do at that age because you haven't yet developed the way to function. And it's very much just, there's no like moral right and wrong to the kid's behavior. That's just the way they act, and you train them to learn what to do is socially acceptable. So it's a different approach, right? That sometimes you'll hear, well, no, that's just, they'll grow out of it. And sometimes the way they grow out of it is that they learn more complicated ways to do the same tantrum.
Manipulation.
Same, yeah, they're still manipulating, it's just not by banging their head and hands on the ground. But we
another
still.
Another benefit of parenting in a community is, as my kids got older, being able to say, you know, like, the Brasso boys aren't allowed to do this either. You
right.
know, like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like, yeah. this is, I am not out of bounds here.
Yeah, that's right.
If we're crazy, we're all crazy together.
That's right.
Exactly. Yes.
And some parents are better at setting some rules than others, and so sometimes you can lean on them and say, well, why are you doing this? Well, I think that's very wise that they did this with
yeah.
them. You know, like, just so you can hold them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first moved here, we had young kids, mm-hmm. and I had a showdown with one of my kids in the parking lot. I screaming at me, I spanked them, and then I turned around and I saw the entire Dorsey family, and it was like they were posing for a family portrait, just watching me do all this, and I was like, uh-oh, and then Floyd said, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were amused, but it was good to have that kind of support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I was used to, in living in L.A., you do something like that in L.A.,
oh, yeah.
and you're afraid that social services is going to come knocking at your door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, there is a reinforcement that a church community gives.
And especially, I don't know, maybe it's in all areas of life, but I mean, this is one for sure where you're not going to get wisdom from anywhere outside the church, really, that's biblical on how to parent your kids. You're going to get tons of bad advice from about everywhere else. And even in the church, I think it was really helpful to, kind of like I was saying earlier, that you really have to get pretty personal to give someone feedback on parenting their kids. It's not just you see him once a week, hey, good to see you. Oh, when it comes to your son, I want you to, mm-hmm. right? It's very personal, and it can be very, you can feel very threatened, and so you have to have kind of some genuine fellowship and, you know, really be open to that relationship and open to that feedback. Mm-hmm. So, for example, your teenage daughter comes home. You tell her to be home by 11. At midnight, she strolls in. At midnight. You let her know that she has sinned against you and God, and in response, she says, "You are such a legalist, Dad." There's no scripture that gives me a curfew. All right, so, quick answer, what do we say?
So this is obey your father and mother?
Yeah, open your Bible, daughter. So you got Ephesians and Colossians, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Obey your parents in everything, right?
But you are right. There's not a curfew in the Bible.
That's right.
Good job knowing that.
Good, yeah, there you go.
Never.
That means you should be home by 9 next time. I can change that number to whatever I want. That's the great thing about the freedom that God gives. And that sometimes, right, as a Christian community, there is some freedom. It's okay that some parents it's 10, and some it's 9, and some it's this, and some it's that. And if there's a stress there or tension, it creates a good opportunity to talk to your kids or talk to the parents, right? And figure out, okay, well, we, like one thing when our kids were little, there's some families that they just aren't a fan of sleepovers, right? And some are like, oh, it's fine. So sometimes it's like, well, would they like to sleep over at the house on the weekend? Well, we don't do that. Okay, you know, like there's different ways that people parent. Some are okay, some are not, and there's different. I don't know, I was just thinking about the whole, we'll probably get to it later, but like when your kids stay at your parents, grandma's house, grandma's rules.
The reset button.
Yeah. But grandma did this. Well, that's grandma's house, right? Grandma and grandpa have their own set of rules, right? Yeah. So.
Well, on the flip side of the coin for the grandparents, it's an incredible blessing to know that I don't have to discipline. But that doesn't mean I can't say, hey, you just messed up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to your dad.
Yeah. You can get involved whenever you want to. You don't have to.
Yeah. But there's I know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There's that phrase that raise your kids and their grandparents can spoil them, but spoil your kids and then their grandparents will have to raise them.
Oh.
And it's kind of that reality of when you do raise your kids well, the relationship with grandparents is good and very different. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When you don't, it's hard on the grandma and grandpa.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Grandma and grandpa are going to take their kids. Don't raise them well.
It's like, we're busy tonight.
Your problem.
So, what do you guys think, like, the differences, maybe some key things that you can observe, like toddlers versus children, teenagers, what's it look like when they really respect their parents' authority? Where's some like giveaways, like, oh, I can tell that toddler or that child or that teenager respects the authority
that
parents.
Play with others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, a trained toddler is more apt to share and not bite and not hit. And
pull hair. Scream.
Even though some of those happen,
I'm scared.
Punch.
I'm scared. But in general, they know they're going to be in trouble.
Right. Not here, but theoretically at some church somewhere. Yes.
Oh, it's here.
Oh, it's here, she says. Okay. Yeah.
I've written up those reports.
Oh, yeah. So how they treat other toddlers, right?
And other adults.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what you were talking about before, where they can be pretty naughty at home with you, but when they're well behaved, you know, in someone else's care, then that's evidence.
Yeah, and ideally, the parents should be the ones who see the worst in the kids, because that's where they can only keep up a false pretense for so long, And sometimes that can be, there can be a relationship between parents that don't quite understand their kids are oftentimes parents that don't spend large periods of time with their kids. So if they're, if the dad or mom has gone a lot working and only see their kid for just a little bit of time, it's hard for them to really get a full sense of their depravity, right, or what's going on. Oh, really? Did that?
I think it's important for those of us that are older or whatever, or taking care of, to let the parents know too.
Yeah.
You know, I can, Tiffany's in her season of four and under,
mm-hmm.
three of which need discipline almost constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But when they come to our house, there's such a joy. And so to like, just remind her, you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like all you're doing is disciplining, and sometimes that is all you're doing, but
yeah.
They're so enjoyable to be around. Yeah.
That's a great encouragement. So important, because like you said, sometimes like when you're working the farm and the garden and you're planting and you're weeding, you're doing nothing, you don't see any fruit. Long time, no fruit. So it's very, you need that encouragement.
Not to leave the other grandchild out. Ryle is also very
tough. Yeah.
He is.
He's good. It's good.
I think just in terms of what does it look like if they're a toddler, I mean, you're still way over here on the authority side
mm-hmm.
of that chart.
So
and so it really should look like they obey you right away. Like, that's really what it looks like.
Yeah, they
they're not questioning. They say, yes, mommy. They do the thing. And if they don't, they get a spanking. They expect it. That's all part of the authority.
Yeah.
And there's really no other way to describe it.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
And I would say that the reason that's so important is that real growing really in their ability to make decisions has to follow obedience and submission. So, like, I can't really exercise wise choices until I've said, I am going to submit to all of God's commands, whatever he says I'm going to do. And once those, right, once I've obeyed God, then, okay, if I have freedom
mm-hmm.
to do things, I can make those choices. And with our kids, when they're little, yeah, they have to obey every single thing that we tell them to do. Just right away. And if they don't, we're setting them up for a couple of possibilities, right? One, an extremely difficult time when they're older, just gets more difficult, older they get, where they do eventually, okay, I'm going to be submissive. Or where they never really, it's something that has to be a kind of a lifelong change, miraculous work of the Holy Spirit to sanctify them. But it makes it much easier for them to embrace God's authority if they've learned to accept it at that young age. So they do it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So is it look any different when they're teenagers? How would it be a little bit different?
That was one of the hardest things for me about parenting teenagers is, because I expected obedience right away.
Mm-hmm.
I said it, so you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get older, you have to give some of that away. And figuring out when you let them give their opinion and when you expect,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, that was hard.
Yeah, and we're doing that not because we just can't control them anymore. We're like, we intentionally want them to become more and more their own person, where they are submitting to God without our discipline. And so we're trying to wisely give them those choices, timing it, right, seeing how they do.
And part of that is teaching them how to interact with somebody when you want to give your own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
yeah.
teaching them how to be an adult.
Yeah. We had a time where the kids would hit a certain age, right, and when they're really young, you tell them to do something, yes, and they did it. And, right, they hit that why stage, right? So we talked about, you don't ask why, and then it was, you can say, may I ask why? So that we'd tell them something, may I ask why? No. Okay, they do it. But once in a while, I would say, and I would always tell them, if you start obeying and you ask, I might tell you why. And so then as they got older, I would say, well, I want you to do this because X, Y, Z. So they understand the reasoning. Because at a young age, they don't have the ability to understand anything, right? And then as they get older. Tanner, are you going to add something?
Well, I was just going to say that I think there's still an element with a teenager. they do have to obey, like they're still under your authority. Mm-hmm. But with the greater the influence, mm-hmm. and the less of like the heavy hand, where they're starting to be able to make some of their own decisions and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think one of the signs of respect towards their parents is that they ask for their parents' input on mm-hmm. the decisions that they make. So it's not just like, I have total freedom to now do whatever I want.
Right.
But there's still a seeking wisdom from their parents mm-hmm. in making those.
That's a great point. That's a great point. When we reach this kind of where influence is overtaken, we start to see that their kids will ask, you know, you've given them the freedom. What do you think I should do here? And you can say, you know, if I were you, I would probably do this. You know, these two or three choices might be all acceptable before God. And these are kind of some thinking, helping them think through some drawbacks. Like, oh, I did this, and it turned out this way. Your mom did it this way, and it turned out that way. And we have a friend who made this choice, and this is kind of how it turned out. So helping them and supporting them, okay, well, I think I'm going to do this. Okay, so this might happen, but we'll just see how it goes. And
I think that them coming to you and asking for your opinion happens more when you have actually given them areas to be, I won't almost say authority over, but, you know, you've allowed them to decide how you're going to.
Some freedom.
Like, yeah, some freedoms that you've purposely set them down and said, okay, now you have this freedom to choose this. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just like, especially as they're turning into an adult,
yeah,
they're just going to be buddying with you.
Yeah.
But once you've given some freedoms, then they do want to come and ask you for it.
Yeah,
Tanner. Yeah, and I was going to add to that too. Like, we're talking about respect here, not mm-hmm. fear, which is sort of could be a synonym or mm-hmm. or maybe dread. You know, like the parent who, the abusive parent or the overly heavy-handed parent, like if you have that kind of parent, then when they're communicating to their kids that they don't have their kids' best interests in mind. And so when their kid gets older and has more discretion, ability to make more decisions, their kid is going to be less likely to go to them for advice because they don't trust that their parents have their best interests.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I think that, like the respect piece is important even for us as parents, as we're not trying to intimidate our kids per se, mm-hmm. But we're trying to, you have that both like the loving authoritarian parent, which I think we're
right.
Right in
the
middle.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's the kind of two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that starts from very young, that like when a child is small enough where they're still, you know, they might get a spanking for something they've disobeyed, and they might not understand that, but you can show that by, you know, being very warm and embracing and hugging and very loving afterwards. It's always a physical representation first. Okay, there's punishment for disobedience, but there's love and forgiveness afterwards. And as they begin to think, the discipline and instruction comes in where you're constantly talking them through. Why is this happening? And I think this question L is a good, what are some ways that you can model that submission for authority? How do we do that as parents? Like, they want to see what it looks like to obey. What are ways we can model that?
I think involvement in the church, just as they're growing up, they're going to see you submit to elders mm-hmm. and submit to just like the structure of the church. Sometimes it's like, I wouldn't necessarily do this programming thing or whatever, but mm-hmm. because we're a part of this church and this is how they see the structure in it, it's good for us to be a part mm-hmm. of it. So they can see that and understand like this reality of submitting to authority.
Yeah. It's a great example, like what he says, that you can even voicing for them that, you know, I don't see why, or it wouldn't be what I would choose, but this is what the leadership is doing, so we need to support that. Like, that's a very radical thing,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
whereas it'd be very tempting in a lot of families to just gripe about the authority. My boss said this, and they're an idiot, you know? Right? I mean, you see that. That doesn't really model submission. They're going to go out, my dad said this, and he's an idiot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other ways?
parents to husbands,
yeah,
moms to dads,
yeah,
submitting to dads and decisions to lead family or in discipline or in other areas. Parents can see that, or even just like moms, like, this is daddy's preference, so we're gonna do it this way, and like serving in that way to model obedience, but also like a servant heartedness.
Yeah, the mother, father, the husband, wife dynamic is an amazing teacher. It's an amazing teacher because they get to see that structure of leadership and submission in the most loving, I mean, it can be a great way of teaching loving submission.
I think you have to be careful with politics. Yeah, there is a sense where we're supposed to honor the king and show appreciation for that. And so if you're always complaining about authority,
Yeah,
that you have to submit to, whether it's your boss or the government or the elders, you're kind of teaching your children to have a disposition to be cynical towards authority as well. And eventually they're going to be cynical towards yours.
Yeah, absolutely. That if you're always demonstrating that I could do it better, right? If only I was the king, or if only I, right, then your kid's going to embrace the same view towards you. There's a few questions. You can kind of think about these as we're wrapping up. You don't have to respond out loud. Do your children respect and respond to your authority? If anyone wants to volunteer. No, they don't. But, you know, think about, kind of be reflective as you think about if you're parenting now, right? Do they submit? Do they respond? Do they respect you? Are there any ways that your children are disregarding your authority? How do your children respond to the other authorities? We've talked about that a little bit before. And then what are the steps you can take? So when you get, if you walk through those reflection questions in your parenting now, that should kind of lead you to think, okay, what should I bring up if I have another mom or dad that I respect that I would just, you know, I think they're responding, they seem to disregard in this area, I'm not sure what step to take, right? They're really naughty at school, whatever it is. Right? Think through those questions. And I do think that one of the strengths particularly of our church is that we have very open, lots of families, lots of kids, lots of opportunities, and people are generally open to talk about parenting and how they do it and what are some, there's also some good resources. I think at some point we'll do a book display, show and tell. There's a lot of good books that we have that you could recommend. So I'm going to read through the conclusion here. By design, you know, parents represent God to their children. They have been given authority, or you have been given authority and responsibility to impart to their children the fear and the instruction of the Lord. Thus, a child who ignores his parents or disobeys his parents ignores and disobeys the primary means by which God has revealed himself or made himself known to them. This rejection of any God-given authority is rejecting God by connection. God has given us authorities in many forms, and when we reject those authorities, we are rebelling against God. And so children cannot claim to be honoring God while dishonoring their parents or any authority figure in their life. And so as parents, if we're faithful, we want to understand that our children's obedience to our authority is a means of blessing them, teaching them, training them to obey all the authorities that God's given them in their lives. And so my encouragement is to embrace that role of authority. Just believe it. It's a good thing. God gave it to you as parents. You are the authority. Figure out how to use it the best way that you possibly can. Right? So let's pray for today. Father, we thank you. We thank you for the blessing that we have. We've been blessed so much by your authority over creation and over our lives. You make the decisions. You guide and control all things by your infinite wisdom, which is so far beyond our abilities. And we thank you that in your infinite authority, you have also given us the role and the responsibility as parents to be an example and to share in and to be a steward of some of that authority in the lives of our kids. Teach us, train us, help us to humbly parent in a way that seeks to glorify you, to honor you, and to be your representative, to be your image bearer to bear the image of a great and glorious God in the eyes of our children, that they may grow up seeing parents who are loving and merciful, who are full of grace and compassion, and who discipline us and who discipline their children for their good. Thank you so much for this time of study, and pray that you'd bless each family here and each parent as they seek to honor and glorify you now and in the future. In Christ's name, amen.